we're going to continue talking music here. And as you know, I'm a big fan of Saturday Night Live, and I have been since the very beginning. And they've had some really, really incredible music performances on SNL over the course of the 40-some years that it's been on, 43 years that it's been on. So I thought we could talk about that, about some of the best, most memorable SNL musical guest performances ever. And maybe you can talk about some of the weirdest or the worst. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for your thoughts on this. And I was thinking, most recently, Childish Gambino did a couple of great performances, including This Is America, just a couple of weeks ago on SNL. And those were both standout performances for this season. Last season, Tribe Called Quest, when they came back, just killed on SNL. They were amazing. And there's a lot of classic performances from, you know, the past and years and years and years ago that that are also memorable as well. And we want to hear from you on what you think. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Also, Skip Skipley's on his way, and we will be debuting For the Record, the brand new trivia game that Skip will be hosting for us, and Esmeralda and I will be battling with our knowledge of 80s and 90s music, and we will also hear Esmeralda sing. Cats are very excited because it's a new format. So the cats are outside. They're a little confused because they're going to have to get used to the new rules and the new format. But I think they'll be okay.
They'll be happy to know Skip is still here.
Skip is, yeah. That's you know, when we did this, if Skip refused to do it, we wouldn't have, we would have just stopped.
Yeah, the cats would have rioted.
Oh, the cats would not have been happy. Of course. The only thing the cats love more than Skip is your voice.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So, so that's all coming up. So we're talking SNL musical guest performances, and I mean, you know, the most I guess the most legendary one. It wasn't a great performance, but I guess the most legendary appearance in the history of Saturday Night Live in terms of music, musical guests. Esmeralda, who would you say would be the most legendary?
Oh, legendary.
Yeah, like a moment of live television that was just like, huh?
I mean, it has to be, oh my gosh, her name is eluding me at the moment. She ripped up the Pope's picture.
Right, Sinead O'Connor.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, Dan, that's obviously the one that, of all of the, it wasn't, you know, I mean, she did a nice job with the song, and then all of a sudden, she tears up the picture of the Pope. And I remember my girlfriend and I at the time, we were watching it. And, you know, and I'm actually a really, really big Sinead O'Connor fan. I think she's awesome. And I was very excited that she was on, and we're watching it. And then she does that. And I was like, and they cut to commercial, and you could hear a pin drop in the studio. Like she ripped up the picture of the Pope. She tore the picture of the Pope. And then you could hear a pin drop in the studio, and then they slowly faded to black and went to a commercial. And I remember sitting on the couch next to my girlfriend, and I looked at her, and I'm like, "What just happened? What was that?" And we were both just stunned. And there was no acknowledgement of it for the rest of the show or anything. She clearly was banned for life after doing that, because that's not what she was supposed to do. Obviously. So here's what it was October 3rd, 1992. So it was a long time ago. October 3rd, 1992. Lorne Michaels said, "I was stunned of the single most," he says, "the single most controversial moment in SNL history, but not as much as the guy from the audience who was trying to charge her." I didn't know about that. In a performance that garnered more than 4,000 phone calls to NBC, O'Connor delivered a chilling a cappella rendition of Bob Marley's War, changing the line "fight racial injustice" to "fight sexual abuse," and then tore up a picture of Pope John Paul II. O'Connor later admitted that viewers might have missed the significance of the act, a protest against incidents of sexual abuse in the Irish church that emerged years before similar scandals hit the U.S. It's very understandable that the American people did not know what I was going on about, she said later. Yeah. But, yeah, so, and, you know, in dress rehearsal, that's not what she, that's not what she did. She held, if I remember correctly, in dress, she held up, I think she held up a picture of Marley, if I'm not mistaken. And then in, you know, it, when it was live, she tore up a picture of the Pope. And that footage has never been shown again. In fact, you know, like, you know, you can usually find a lot of this footage on YouTube or search around on the internet. You won't find the footage of Sinead O'Connor's performance. You can see still, there are still pictures. You can still, you can see a picture of her holding the and tearing the picture of the Pope. But that performance has been basically erased. But I remember just my girlfriend and I just like looking at each other like, what? Couldn't believe what we had seen. Couldn't believe what we had seen. And in the book, Live from New York, they talked to the cast members who were there that night, and everybody was just, they had no idea. Some people didn't see it, and some people were, you know, Lorne Michaels obviously was completely shocked. The thing about Lorne Michaels is that he watches every episode of SNL on a monitor right from the side, like from the side of the stage. It's that little, it's a little perch that he sits. He usually brings a bottle of wine, and he sits and he drinks like some wine, and sits on his perch watching, you know, looking between the live stuff that's happening on stage and what's happening on the monitor. And the thing about him is whenever anything weird happens, and weird things happen on live TV, that's one of the reasons why it's so much fun to watch Saturday Night Live, is because, you know, any screw up can happen, anything can happen. And that right there, that Sinead O'Connor thing, is an example of one of the most shocking and memorable moments in live TV history. That's why live television can be great. But he's just, you know, people are freaking out around Lauren. Lauren's always just like, it's okay. She's banned. Then that's it. And, you know, and that's him all the time. Whenever anything happens, he's banned a bunch of different people that have been banned for life from the show. Adrian Brody was banned for life because he did like a weird Jamaican. He had dreads and a hat on, and he did like a weird Jamaican introduction with a bad Jamaican accent that veered off. All he's supposed to say is just, you know, here's the artist, and that's it. And he veered off in this weird, did this weird thing. And then and Lauren just sitting by the perch going, yeah, he's banned. He's gone. So that's, Martin Lawrence got banned for life because he did some incredibly risque material for his monologue. And, you know, and Lorne Michaels was all right, because that was right at the beginning of the show, too. So it was the monologue. So that he couldn't just like kick Martin Lawrence out because they had 80 minutes to fill. On live television. So he did the show, and then afterwards, like, oh, thank you for coming. You'll never be invited again. So, same thing happened to Sinead O'Connor. What's really funny is, you know, Sinead O'Connor was part of a couple of big pieces of controversy when it comes to SNL. I don't know if you guys remember that in 1990, about 2.5 years before the tearing of the Pope incident, Andrew Dice Clay hosted SNL, and this was like sort of at the height of his popularity. I think Ford Fairlane had just been out, and it was really near the height of his popularity. And Nora Dunn, under protest, did not appear on the show. She boycotted the show. The musical guest that was scheduled to be on that night was Sinead O'Connor, and she protested too and boycotted the show and didn't do it. So she's part of two, you know, controversial moments in SNL history. One being that, you know, like the you know, people were, because at this point, you know, like Andrew Dice Clay was massive, but you know his materials, you know, he's incredibly misogynistic and you know, and vulgar, and people were just like up in arms over it. And so Nora Dunn and Sinead O'Connor both protested on, you know, for reasons that they thought he was dangerous and misogynistic. Although it was really kind of ironic that Sinead O'Connor at the time was speaking out vocally in support of some really, really horrendously misogynistic hip hop. Like, she was all for that, but she protested when Andrew Dice Clay was on. So, an interesting woman, that Sinead O'Connor, man. She is. She's a weird chick, but I love her. All right, so those are some memorable moments. We're talking about musical moments on SNL, and they've had some great, great musical moments over the years, and we would love to hear from you. So, what do you think? 312-981-7200. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here, 2 for Tuesday. Your man, 2 for Tuesday continues. That's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 773 area code, requesting Fifth Dimension. That's Stone Soul Picnic, which is a great, great song. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we're talking about, we're keeping the music theme going for this Tuesday morning. Skip Skipley's on the way. We're going to play For the Record. It's our new game. But right now, I wanted to talk about the most memorable or the best SNL music performances of all time, or maybe the most memorable, the weirdest, or whatever. And we've just been talking about that, and I want to hear from, I'd love to hear from you guys. 312-981-7200. John in Indiana said, not guests, but Steve Martin's King Tut and the More Cowbell sketch. You know what? You guys know the story behind why that sketch, because it didn't work very well in Dress. Like, it didn't get a lot of laughs when they did it in Dress. You know the story, right, Dan?
Yeah, I remember why the wardrobe changed. That changed everything.
Absolutely. Esmeralda, do you know the story behind this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Will Ferrell changed his shirt. And and the shirt was too small for him, and his belly was hanging out, and that just, like, killed everybody on stage. My favorite part of that sketch is walking, because everybody else on stage, he's in another, you know, because that walking, every time he hosts SNL, he seems to be on another, well, he seems to be on another planet all the time and in real life, I would imagine. But, like, he never breaks away from the teleprompter. He uses the, you know, uses the cue cards, like, pretty much all the time. And during that sketch, everybody's gone. Except it's Parnell's not laughing, though. Parnell's not laughing. Everybody else is. And when you have Horatio Sands and Jimmy Fallon on the stage, you know, they're going to break no matter what. But, you know, like, Will Ferrell loses, everybody loses, but Walken is in that zone. That's what's so funny about it, is because he's not affected by anything that's happening on stage. All of the people breaking and all the weirdness, the derailing of the sketch, he doesn't see that at all. He is zoned in. And, yeah, it's pretty special. But that was, I mean, that was great. It wasn't a musical performance, but, I mean, it's a great music-related sketch. 815 error code simply says, Fear. Well, V knows about that one, Esmeralda.
He does.
This is an insane story. This was in 1981. Lorne Michaels wasn't on the show at this time. This was the time when Lorne Michaels was gone. He had left the show. And Dick Ebersol was producing at the time. And Belushi wasn't even on the show. And Belushi and Michael O'Donohue, genius, you know, writer for National Lampoon, who would go on to be a writer on SNL and a performer, too. Michael O'Donohue actually speaks the first lines ever spoken on SNL in the very first episode in 1975. That's Michael O'Donohue. And he would do Mr. Mike's Mondo Video. He was a crazy, insane, wonderful comedic voice. And he and Belushi insisted that Fear play on SNL. And they weren't even part of the show anymore. O'Donohue might have still been a writer. I'm not sure. I think he may have. He might have been gone, though, but at that point. So Belushi shows up. Has not been on the set. This point, 1981, this is about 6 months before Belushi dies. So he's at, like, his craziest at this point, you know? And obviously, he's a mega star at this point and just hasn't been on SNL at all. So he says, I want Fear to be on the show. Dick Ebersol doesn't. He's a very straight-laced dude, has no idea who this band is. So the story goes that, here's what I'll read. No one was prepared for the mayhem that erupted when John Belushi and Michael O'Donohue invited L.A. hardcore punks Fear to perform. They became Pied Pipers to what the New York Post headlined as a quote-unquote riot, led by Lee Ving's bluesy vocal chops and snarky asides. Hey, it's great to be here in New Jersey. Fear blurred through a compulsive performance of songs like Beef Baloney, as dozens of authentic punks slam dance, swarm, stage dove, and scream stuff like New York sucks. The real audience that was there for Saturday Night Live was scared to death, frontman Lee Ving said. They didn't know what the hell was happening with all of the mayhem. The camera people were trying to protect their cameras. Dick Ebersol, who was producing and stage managing, got hit in the chest with a pumpkin. And then Ebersol darted into control room and promptly had Dave Wilson, the director, rerun the Eddie Murphy prison poetry short, Kill My Landlord, C-I-L-L, My Landlord, which was called Pros and Cons. Right behind, as the band was launching into their third song, it crossed the boundaries of edgy late-night programming and introduced living rooms to the punks' unique style of dancing and reveled in the anarchy of live television. Ving said, as a result, I have become one of the esteemed members of the Permanently Banned. Permanently Banned. Even though Lorne Michaels wasn't there. Lorne Michaels would have been, oh, this isn't good. And evidently the other thing is that they didn't mention in this in the little description here is that Belushi was leading the riot. Like Belushi was tearing the place up. He didn't care. He didn't work there anymore. He's like a millionaire, you know. He's and he comes back to the show, brings these punks in who rip up the place, and he leads the riot. Like if you watch footage of it, there's still footage of this available. If you watch footage of it, Belushi's leading the whole thing. He's busting chairs. He's knocking people over. Oh man! So anyway, yeah. So the 815 area code just simply typed in fear. So amazing. All right, we got a break here, and we were talking about the best, most memorable, maybe the weirdest musical performances in Saturday Night Live history. 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and we'll get to the news right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and 2 for Tuesday continues. You're married, 2 for Tuesday. John requests the Cars, and that's Let's Go. Can't go wrong with the Cars. Hi, everybody. 312-981-7200 talk and text. We are talking about the most memorable, the best, maybe the weirdest, the wildest SNL musical guest performances of all time. And we'd love to hear from you on your thoughts on this at 312-981-7200. Skip Skipley is on the way. We will debut our brand new trivia game called For the Record. All about 80s and 90s songs and stuff like that. So that's all coming up. And if you would like to join us at any time, it's 312-981-7200. So we're talking about the memorable performances, musical guest performances on SNL, and we got a 773 area code text that says, of course, Elvis Costello in 78-ish, it was 77. He stopped the song Less Than Zero and went into Radio. Well, he wasn't supposed to do that. Was actually banned from the show for, I think, 10 to 12 years or something. I don't think he appeared on the show again until like 89 or 90. It's a crazy story, but I saw him at the Aragon that year for $6.50. Our texter says, I bought the ticket with pennies I rolled up and bought a single ticket at the Sears at Six Corners. Me and my buddies took the Lawrence Avenue bus down. Wow. I bet that was a hell of a show. $6.50 and he paid with pennies at the Sears. At the Sears at Six Corners. You know, Dan, I feel bad now every time I go past that Sears. It just makes me sad.
Yeah, they've got the signs.
Everything
up,
must go. It just makes me sad, you know? I used to go to that Sears a lot. That one and the one on Lawrence. The East on Lawrence by Ravenswood. But, yeah, that one at Six Corners, it's a legendary store, man.
Very much.
It's been there forever. It's like a landmark of that intersection.
Absolutely.
Man, I don't know. That whole area has, you know, they've knocked everything down. They're changing everything.
Yeah, we were actually over there on Saturday for a birthday party, and it is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, that strip and how it's changed so much in just a few years.
Oh, yeah, it's nuts. And then just a little bit further west of Six Corners, you got the Culver's, which has a line all the time, you know, like 10 deep to get into the Culver's. They got a Binney's Beverage Depot
right
that just opened.
That retro fitness thing.
The retro fitness thing. They got the axe throwing.
Actually, Eileen was at that place on Friday.
Oh, is that right? Did she throw some axes around?
She did.
Did
my cousins
fun?
Were there. Yeah, they had a blast. So,
yeah, that's there too. And they, you know, the they knocked the building down across the street from Sears. That's completely empty now. What are they putting up there? Do we know?
I don't think we know officially.
Yeah.
So I've heard a Target might be moving into either the Sears space or that space. But that's not official.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't be surprised by that, though.
Yeah. It'd be a good spot for them.
It would. I mean, where's the nearest Target from there? The one on Addison?
The one on Addison.
Addison and the Kennedy.
Yeah,
right?
A little bit further
east.
West, I think.
Okay.
No, you're right. East. North.
So it's west of Kimball.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Is in the same spot where Dapper's is?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, there you go. Now we're just talking about our neighborhoods.
Where else are there Targets?
Yeah, let's go through all the Targets that are available.
I've heard there's one at Harlem Irving and Plaza.
But where's that?
I don't know.
The Hip? I don't know. Harlem Irving Plaza? Where is that?
I was just over there, and the where the Target sign was, it looked like someone yanked it off.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hooligans.
So I don't... Well, but it's like
just
up
a bunch of
crazy
punks.
Up in the sky. Not sky, but...
Big Walmart fans?
Maybe.
No, they're still upset.
They spray painted Walmart where the Target sign was.
They're still upset that Venture's closed in that same spot. That's what they're upset
about. That's the Kmart.
That's a Kmart now. That's right.
Can I also say real quick, I was over there.
Yeah.
That area is amazing.
With the Hip?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a Nordstrom Rack and a Kohl's.
Yeah.
There's an Old Navy and a Payless and a Shoe Carnival. I did not know that all that was over there.
All that is over there. You've got...
A Michaels and a Joann Fabrics.
And you've got Rolling Stone, which is still the greatest record store in the city.
And that Bananas place. Does that actually exist? I saw the sign.
I don't know.
The Go Bananas.
Oh, yeah. No, that exists.
Does it?
Yeah,
okay.
That's right by the Norwich Theater.
I want to go
that's
there.
That's where the Norwich is right now. They've got that, and there's a Miller's Pub?
Yeah, Pub or Ale House or something
Ale House,
like that.
Miller's Ale House. That's right there, too. Culver's is now open. Is that open yet?
I don't know if the Culver's is open.
I mean, it's nuts. Right. It's crazy. You go down that strip on Harlem.
Yeah, in the dark finisher golf place. That's a lot of fun.
Oh, I saw that, too.
Yeah.
I just need to hang out there.
Eileen and I had a delicious Outback Steakhouse dinner thanks to Nick. He gave me a gift card for Christmas, and we had that like a month ago.
And that's right there too.
And then you went to the Go Bananas.
Do they? Am I also
without our kids?
Do they also have the indoor skydiving thing? Is that?
That might be going in where the old Service Merchandise was.
Oh God, Service Merchandise.
I like that you still have to call it where the old Service merchandise was. Right. So nothing has been in there since?
Well, no, there have, but that's...
That was the most notable?
Greg's, I think, went in there.
H.H. Greg, yeah. I did an appearance at that H.H. Greg.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for this radio station. Signed autographs and pictures and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And like one of those pop-up Halloween stores always like takes over for a month there.
That's true. Yeah, no, Esmeralda, the Hip is hip.
I didn't know. I went over to the Joann Fabrics, and as I was walking around, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no,
there's so much here.
It's always
been... What is an Esmeralda picking up at a Joann Fabrics?
I bought my mom for Mother's Day a lamp with a magnifying glass on it, because she's always doing her nails in the window of the kitchen, because she's trying to get the sunlight, and I was like, well, here's a lamp.
And here's a magnifying glass.
Yeah, because you can't see.
Wow. All right. You can get that at Michael's.
Joann Fabrics.
Oh, Joann Fabrics. Yeah. Okay. All right. And there's a Michael's there, too.
There is.
Yeah.
I think there's an indoor... Well,
and a Bed Bath & Beyond.
There's a laser tag place in that corner.
Yeah. The Hip has always been the place to hang. When I was in my late teens and early 20s, we were always hanging out around the Hip.
I also didn't realize Straight Shot from my house.
Yeah.
I take the Montrose bus the whole way.
Absolutely. Take it straight to Harlem and you're there.
So great.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll pass by, you know, when you're on the Montrose bus and you're going west on the Montrose bus, you'll pass by the place where I was arrested.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And almost shot by a Norwich cop.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Is there a little plaque there?
No. Yeah. There is.
Like where the Obamas first met?
It's the other plaque that he has.
It's the other plaque, yeah.
He doesn't talk about that one as much.
I don't like to talk about this one out here. I like to talk about, but...
That other one doesn't glow.
No, it doesn't. So anyway, all right. Singing the praises of the... How the hell did we get onto this? How did we get into the...
Because of the Sears.
Oh, the Sears, because he bought his tickets at Sears.
Yeah.
He bought his tickets at Sears, and that got us lamenting the fact that the Six Corners Sears is closing.
By the way, all this wonderful talk about the hip has made me late getting you the weather, so you'll need a tap dance. Oh.
All right, well, you know what? I'll just talk to Tom. Hey, Tom.
Hello?
Hey, yeah, you're on the air.
Hi. You're talking about memorable performances on SNL.
Yep.
I got to go with Joe Cocker, not necessarily for his performance, but for the spot-on impersonation that Belushi does immediately after it.
Well, no, it's not immediately after it. He's on stage with him.
Oh, I didn't. I thought it was after.
No. No.
Which one was Joe Cocker?
No. Belushi was on stage next to Joe Cocker, and it's...
Oh, my God.
No. It's legendary. It's legendary. And
yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, yeah, that
impersonation is supposed to be the greatest form of compliment, but I don't know how Joe Cocker felt about that.
Yeah, well, it was a little uncomfortable to watch, to be quite frank. I mean,
it was, but
Belushi was known for his Joe Cocker because when he did Lemmings, he did National Lampoon's stage show Lemmings. One of the showstoppers was when he came out and did his Joe Cocker. Lemmings was a satire of Woodstock and outdoor festivals and stuff. And so he would come out and just kill. He would do it was the showstopper at Lemmings. He would do Joe Cocker. And so when Joe Cocker was on, they said, you got to go out and do Cocker next to him.
Yeah. It's something that's one I'll never forget.
Absolutely.
Jeez, of all the performances. That's one I always seem to remember.
No, you're right. It's classic.
Love your show.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
All right. Bye.
I don't know if you've ever seen this footage, Esmeralda, of Belushi doing Joe Cocker.
I'm actually watching it now.
It's amazing.
Does Joe Cocker have, is that just kind of what he did with his arms and stuff?
Yeah, that's what he did. I don't know if he was, I don't think he was afflicted with anything. That was just his style.
Because it just looks a little like he's mocking him.
No, I know. That's exactly why it seems weird. Yeah. You know, the thing is, I don't think it was a physical condition. I know Joe Cocker was a quirky guy. But when he sang, he really got into it and would really move around and writhe and stuff. When Belushi comes out, it's pretty brilliant and pretty ballsy that he went out there and did that, like standing next to Cocker. And the fact is that Cocker was fine with it. You know what I mean? It wasn't, I mean, like, you know, obviously years and years had passed and he knew Belushi and they became friends. So Cocker was fine with it. It's just a little strange when you first watch it. You're like, oh, man.
Well, because he's not out there with him immediately.
Right.
He kind of just shows up.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's from 1976. That's old stuff right there. 1976, season 2. So, all right. We got a break here. We got weather. We got traffic. And then afterwards, we'll talk more classic and memorable and out there musical guest performances in SNL history. I got a ton of them here, and we got texts coming in and phone calls at 312-981-7200. Two for Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. We got some lines open for Two for Tuesday. If you want to get your requests in, do it now. It's one artist, two songs. We are taking your Two for Tuesday requests right now, so get them in now. John picked the Cars with Magic. 312-981-7200. Get those Two for Tuesday requests in now. And we are talking about memorable SNL music performances. And we got some people on the line, and we got more musical performances to talk about. Here's John on WGN. Hey, John.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
All right.
You remember George Harrison and Paul Simon were on a Thanksgiving Saturday Night Live in 1976?
Yes, yes. That's the episode where Paul Simon comes out in the turkey costume.
That's right.
And sings still crazy after all these years. Yeah.
I've also heard that John and Paul were watching Saturday Night Live, and either Dick Ebersol or Lorne Michaels held up a check, and he was trying to get the Beatles to unite on there.
Yeah, no, that was Lorne Michaels. That was Lorne Michaels, and he was offering a check for $3,000 for the Beatles to reunite on the show. And
I read that they were in an apartment watching the show, and they said they were just too tired to come down.
The legend is that Paul McCartney and John Lennon were in John Lennon's apartment in up the street in New York, and they almost jumped in a cab and went.
Yeah.
Right. And my favorite part of that is when Lorne Michaels is holding up the check, and he says, "You know, you can." You can split it however you want. If you want to give less to Ringo, that's okay.
That's right. The Rolling Stones were on Saturday Night Live in 1978.
Yeah,
I believe.
Legendary performance. That's where Mick Jagger tongued Keith Richards.
Yeah, that's right. They were performing. I think it wasn't the. Oh, they were playing the album "Some Girls."
Yes, from the "Some Girls" era. Yeah, no question.
I also know of. There's a band, a regional band that was going to appear on Saturday Night Live. There's a legendary tale about this. Bonnie Raitt knew Dick Ebersol and Lorne Michaels, and she met this local band called Lamont Cranston, and they were going to appear on Saturday Night Live. Well, what happened was, just before they were to appear, Belushi told Lorne Michaels he wanted to have the Blues Brothers on, so yeah, they bumped this local band, Lamont Cranston.
Yeah, and then the Blues Brothers played. Yeah, that was that time.
Yeah, they went on to further national success, and Lamont Cranston always remained a regional band.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. All true. All right, John. Thanks, man.
All right, bye.
Take care. Yep. The It's amazing when you think about this. John Belushi, in 1978, John Belushi had the number one movie in the country with Animal House. He was on the number one late night TV show, Saturday Night Live, and he had a number one album all at the same time. Briefcase Full of Blues, the Blues Brothers' first album. All at the same time. So, you know, if he walks up to Lorne Michaels and says, I think you should bump the band tonight and the Blues Brothers are going to play, if you're Lorne Michaels, you go, yeah, all right, to the guy who's got the biggest album, the biggest movie, and the biggest TV show in the country. And also, you'll go nuts, you know, in a cocaine-fueled, insane rant if you don't let the Blues Brothers play. Trucker Jeff on WGN. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Dick. Hey. Long time no talk. Hey, do you remember when Paul McCartney was supposed to be on there, but he was actually alive by a satellite when he did the song Coming Up?
Yeah.
79 or 80?
Yeah, I think it was, yes, it was 79 or 80 for sure when Coming Up came out, yeah.
Yeah, and what is it? He was actually the first, and I guess the only one that's actually never been there. But he was the physical guest.
Right, but he wasn't in studio. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. I totally remember that. I think that was right around the time he got busted for pot, too, if I'm not mistaken. It was. I think they did a couple of pot jokes regarding that, because that was right when he got busted at the airport for having pot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, okay, thank you, Jeff.
Hey.
There you go. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You know what I thought was like one of the best musical performances ever in recent years? The very first time I had ever heard Uptown Funk was the night that Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars were the musical guests on SNL. And I remember losing my mind, because that song is awesome, and it's a fly jam and it's great, and they killed that performance, killed. So in recent years, that's definitely one of my favorite musical performances ever, was Uptown Funk, Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars. So all right, we got more performances to talk about here. If you want to jump in, the most memorable SNL music performances, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also for your Two for Tuesday requests, we've got phone lines are open. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. Request them away. Two for Tuesday, 312-981-7200. Let's take a break. We got the news coming up. More musical SNL performances to talk about. And Skip Skipley's on the way, and we shall introduce the new game For the Record. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. The Pretenders rule. Keith in Kansas for 2 for Tuesday. You hear me, 2 for Tuesday? Back on the chain gang, The Pretenders, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. How you doing? It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue, and we are here until 5 o'clock. And Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. And Skip Skipley's on the way. The cats are gathering. They're all excited for the brand-new game, For the Record. That's coming up. And we're talking about Saturday Night Live and the best musical performances or the most memorable musical performances of all time. We got a few more here. Queen in September of 1982. Queen frontman Freddie Mercury had recently blown out his voice in a fight with his boyfriend, but he still managed to pull off Under Pressure in a show-stopping crazy little thing called Love. The band stopped touring 4 years later due to Mercury's failing health, leaving SNL as Queen's final U.S. performance with the legendary singer. And I remember that performance, too. It was great. It was really, really great. This one, I vaguely remember this one. I don't remember watching it. I don't know if I watched it when it first aired, but I had seen it since. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers in November of 1994. This was significant because it was the fifth of eight SNL appearances, and Petty was down a heartbreaker as he had recently fired drummer Stan Lynch. But he ended up with a pretty good replacement in the form of Dave Grohl, whose band Nirvana had met their tragic end just 7 months earlier. Grohl brought Headbanging Thunder to You Don't Know How It Feels and Honeybee. Tom Petty said, "I even discussed with Dave about joining the band, and he wanted to, but he said he had his own solo thing developing at the time, and that was the Foo Fighters, and of course he would rather have done that." I would love to see, that's got to be on YouTube, right? Dave Grohl playing with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers?
Yeah, you'd imagine.
Because, I mean, that's amazing. Prince, February 21st, 1981. This is the first time Prince was ever on SNL. And obviously this was like 3 solid years before Purple Rain when he became a megastar. He was only 22. A 22-year-old Prince exploded onto SNL with a high-octane version of Party Up, bouncing and spinning, sliding, playing with a wild guitar solo, and then slamming down his mic and storming off the stage. "I was blown away," said producer Gene Demanian. "He was the most original act I'd seen in a long time. Unfortunately," and this is an interesting thing that happened that night, Dan. This is the same night that Charles Rocket dropped the F-bomb. So, like, Prince's performance was not the thing that people were talking about. Had Charles Rocket not dropped the F-bomb, the next day everybody would have been talking about Prince. But instead, everybody was talking about Charles Rocket. And, you know, that footage is, you can see the footage of Charles Rocket. The bit was they were doing a Who Shot JR. This is how long ago it was. They were doing a Who Shot JR bit, and he was JR. And something, like, he really did get hit in the head, and he was a little messed up. And at the end, during the goodbyes, when all the cast members are on stage, and Prince is on stage, too, they're all on stage saying goodbye, Charles Rocket goes, "I just want to know who in the F shot me." And everybody, you could see Denny Dillon was a cast member during that time period. Gilbert Gottfried, I believe, was in the cast at that time as well. It was a weird transitional time because the big time original cast, they had left and they brought in all the new people. And the only person that didn't, you know, Piscopo and Murphy, that was it. Everybody, when Kazurinsky was on there too, but it was a rough period for these guys, you know, these named Charles Rocket. So drops the F-bomb and you could see Denny Dillon go, "Oh," and Eddie Murphy just starts laughing. Eddie Murphy just starts busting out laughing. But yeah, you could see that. So instead of everybody talking about Prince, everybody was talking about Charles Rocket, who lost his job not too soon after that. Yeah, you can't go running around dropping F-bombs. You know, Jenny Slate dropped an F-bomb her first night. Her first night on SNL. I believe her first sketch. I think it was her first sketch on her first night. And Jenny Slate dropped an F-bomb and only lasted one season. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But she's gone on. She's fine. Jenny Slate's gone on to do so many. A million. She's in Venom. Did you know that, Dan? She's in Venom?
No.
I think she's got a really big part in Venom, too. So, have you seen the trailer? You haven't seen the trailer then, have you? Because
no,
she's in the trailer. Because I'm curious as to what you think of the trailer, because there's been a lot of backlash. people talking how terrible, including V, right, Esmeralda? He hated the trailer, right?
Yeah, he had mixed emotions.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I thought it looked pretty cool. Well, it's Tom Hardy, so it...
I thought it was fine. I don't know what...
Yeah, people are really... it looks terrible. Oh, my God. Like, what? It's got Tom Hardy and Jenny Slate. That's enough for me. All right. More text coming in. Oh, Jim Ryan, our buddy Jim Ryan, who was here earlier. Best, Freddie Mercury playing acoustic guitar in the extended live Queen take on Crazy Little Thing Called Love. We just talked about that. Also, Pearl Jam debuting Not For You before Vitalogy was even released. And the worst, it pains me to say, despite being paired with the incomparable Macaulay Culkin, David Bowie's Tin Machine wasn't great. Yeah, I do remember David Bowie's performance that he did in 79, was it? He was like, it was here. Oh, here, yeah, December of 79. Bowie was in his Berlin phase when he made this iconically weird SNL appearance, blending pop, punk, fashion, and gender roles. He took the stage along unknown performance artists Joey Arias and Klaus Nomi and sang TVC 15 while wearing a dress and heels and walking up a stuffed pink poodle. And then putting on a freaky headless marionette getup for the rendition of Boys Keep Swinging. Yeah, that was one of the weirdest things I'd ever seen. That really was one of the weird. That was really one of the weirdest performances I've ever seen. Yeah. 563 area code said, have you had Ashley Simpson yet? Ah, yes, the infamous Ashley Simpson getting busted for lip syncing. You remember that, Esmeralda?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ashley Simpson lip-syncing, and then she blamed it on her band.
Yeah, and then she did that little...
She did the little jig.
Yeah.
Did the little dance. Then she blamed it on her band at the end, during the goodbyes. Jude Law was the host, brought her up and said... And all he said was, well, what do you know, live TV. And she's like, yeah, my band started playing the wrong song. And I was like,
sure, that's what it was.
You jerk.
With someone also pretending to be you, right, as they sang.
Right. I mean, throwing the guys under the bus, you know what I mean?
And, yeah, they're probably the most professional thing of that entire...
Yeah.
Their studio.
Remember what she said the next day?
Band members.
Do you remember what her excuse was the next day?
No.
When the press started to really get a hold of it? Because during the live show, she couldn't think of anything except, of course, to blame her band for screwing up. But the next day, she said she had acid reflux.
Nope. Still makes no sense.
Acid reflux, she said. That's what her problem was. I have this acid reflux, and it's not good.
Is that what you do? You do a jig to alleviate acid reflux.
Yeah, and she was. I guess she said that's why they had the vocal track, because she couldn't sing because of that condition.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I just thought it was a real jerk move of her to throw her band under the bus. I remember watching it live, and I'm like, you jerk. Own up to it.
Well, it makes no sense.
No, of course it doesn't. Oh, they started playing the wrong song. Shut up. All right. Ashley Simpson, one of the memorable music performances. Well, non-performance, actually. Unless you count her dancing around for about 12 seconds. All right. We got to take a break here. We got weather and we got traffic. And we'll do a few more memorable SNL movie music performances. And then Skip Skipley shall arrive. And we will begin our new game, For the Record. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. We're here till 5 a.m., 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Keith in Kansas, picking The Pretenders, That's 2,000 Miles, which is a lovely song. Hello, everyone. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're talking about some of the more memorable musical guest performances in the history of SNL. And let's talk to Roosevelt on WGN. Hey, Roosevelt.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you doing this morning?
All right.
The one I remember the most, Nick, is 1989, Neil Young, No More. I believe he did two songs, No More and Rockin' in the Free World.
Right. Yeah, I remember that, too, because that was after... There was a stretch of time in the 80s when Neil Young was doing some experimental stuff that didn't work. And then, you know, he coming back and doing that, you know, and doing that and, you know, coming back with such a vengeance. And that performance was fantastic on SNL.
Yeah, that's one of the best rocking double songs that I've ever seen as far as performances on SNL.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree. Yep. Neil Young, one of the best. He's still amazing. All right, Roosevelt, thanks for the call, man.
Thank you.
Take care. Yeah. More texts coming in. 847 area code says, Vanessa Williams and Pavarotti doing O Come All Ye Faithful with a full orchestra and choir. Even with me being a classic rocker, this was the best musical performance on SNL of all time. Hmm. 312 area code says, Aykroyd was such a fan of Lamont Cranston, that band, that he had them as an opening act for the Blues Brothers with Jim Belushi at the Chicago House of Blues grand opening. I didn't know that. Peter in Decatur says, early SNL musical performance that blew me away at the time were the Roaches singing the Hallelujah chorus a cappella. 815 area code, I tuned in late, but did anyone mention Paul Simon opening the first show after 9/11 with the Boxer? Some reviewers felt it was an odd choice for Lorne Michaels, but found it to be very moving. Yeah, that was a great way to open the show, I thought. Great way to open the show. So, all right, here's one of my favorites. And this band has been mentioned already during the show. That would be The Replacements. They were on in January of 1986. The Replacements were on, and here's what the description is. Now, and if you've not seen this, it is an insane performance. Now, this is the thing about the thing about The Replacements is you never know what replacements you're going to get when you see them. They're either going to be drunk, or they're going to suck, or they're going to be drunk and they'll be great. Very rarely sober, or drunk and insane, which was the case on Saturday Night Live. Here's what they say. After boozing it up big time backstage, they stumbled through Bastards of Young, then switched clothes before coming out to attempt Kiss Me on the Bus, during which Paul Westerberg yelled, "Come on, blanker," at guitarist Bob Stinson, who obliged by mooning the audience. The chaos led to the band receiving a lifetime ban from Lorne Michaels. Westerberg said, "We were trying to do whatever was possible to make sure that it was a memorable evening." Yeah, you did. You did, Paul. It was memorable. Trust me. Somebody said that the drummer was playing so insanely. My friend Matt O'Neill said this. The drummer during that performance by The Replacements on SNL was playing as though he were being chased. That's how he described. That's how he described the way he was playing the drums. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Let's see what else we got here. Simon and Garfunkel in 1975, October of 1975. This was the second episode. SNL's second episode featured a historic reunion, the first TV appearance by Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel since their 1970 breakup, and the first time they had shared the same stage for 3 years. The duo performed The Boxer, Scarborough Fair, and a new single called My Little Town. They were striking with their intimacy, at once raw, awkward, and friendly. "So you've come crawling back," Simon taunted. In response, Garfunkel deadpanned, it's nice of you to invite me on your show." So those are just some of the classics. Also, some of the other people that they mentioned here. Let's see. Mick Jagger with Jeff Beck and members of the Strokes, Arcade Fire, and the Foo Fighters. It was the 2012 SNL finale. Arcade Fire, Foo Fighters, Jeff Peck, and Nikolai Fraiture from the Strokes were performing with him. Arcade Fire joined him on a trip through some of the early stuff with the singles The Last Time. The Foos joined him for 19 Nervous Breakdown, and It's Only Rock and Roll, But I Like It. And then Beck joined him for the final song. So Beck was on stage with him, too. So that was all-star. All-stars. On one stage. So let's see what else we got here. Kate Bush, the man with the child in his eyes from 1978. She made her American television debut on SNL wearing a glittery gold bodysuit and crooning straight into the camera with varying looks of pleading desperation and wide-eyed delight. Her performance of the dramatic The Man with the Child in His Eyes showed off her vocal range as well as her ethereal dance moves, mostly done while sitting crisscross on a grand piano. So there it is. So those are some of the big ones, and they'll continue. I can't remember who the musical guest is this. I know Tina Fey is hosting. Don't know who the musical guest is this weekend. And it's the season finale, by the way. Tina Fey hosting the season finale of SNL. And I can't remember who the musical guest is. But, so, we'll find out and let you know. That's coming up this Saturday night on NBC. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break. I believe Skip Skipley is here. I know that the cats are outside, and we're ready to go with our brand new game, For the Record. And that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. But the news is first, and that's next.